Welcome back to Shollycast, everybody. Once again, I'm Hydro. I'm with Dr. X. And for this episode, we are joined by Victor Seven, otherwise known as Vic. Welcome, Vic.
Hello. I am happy to be here.
Welcome.
Tell us a little bit about what you work on and what you do.
All right. So as I said, I am Victor Seven. I am with Team Ember Wings, who works on Worlds Crossing Academy. I have been writing for 24 years at this point. I am a published fantasy novelist, author on Amazon. And Worlds Crossing Academy itself has been out for about 3.5 years. My focus is on quality character writing. In anything that I do, I strive to make the characters feel real to the point where I can put two characters in the same room and I know how they're going to interact with each other based on the personality blocks that I built for them. My goal with Worlds Crossing Academy, I've had a lot of experience with AAA JRPGs and things like that in the games that I play, and adult visual novels and adult games that you would find on, say, Itch or several other sites. To know kind of the common tropes and pitfalls of each genre, with your AAA JRPGs and whatnot, you get these amazing, gorgeous, well-crafted worlds and these characters that you fall in love with. I guess a great example you could say is the Final Fantasy VII remake. Just these really beautifully crafted characters with this, you know, these amazing nuances and depth, but the game never gives you the chance to explore your connection with these characters. On the flip side of the coin, you have the adult visual novel or adult games, where the story is typically just thinly veiled excuses to move to the next naughty scene. And the story is laughable at best. I wanted to take the best parts of these two things and put them together to create this really emotionally engaging, slow burn, earn your relationship type of experience, where it still pays off to where you can become, you know, intimate or physical with the characters that you fall in love with, which is why it's such an honor to be a guest here today, because, you know, being here with the creators of In Sexual Awakening 2, a lot of the writing in those games, I was a huge fan of. And as somebody who consistently critiques and criticizes writing decisions, I found myself very, very hooked. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for those kind words. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, I think you are the most experienced or longest writer that we've had on yet for a guest, being around for 24 years. You said you've been writing?
Yes, I've been writing since my early teens. The first book series that I picked up that got me wanting to write was actually The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan. And if you haven't read the books, I'm just going to say watch the show. Watch the show first. It's such a good experience for people who are new to the series. But it started with The Wheel of Time. That's what created my writing style. Later on, I read the Symphony of Ages series by Tamara Pierce, which that's what transformed my character interactions. And even though her main character is a little bit of a Mary Sue, okay, a lot of bit of a Mary Sue, her character banter is exquisite. It's hilarious. It really cued me into the experience of having to simulate multiple brains and how they would interact. Because mostly when we all start writing, we do this thing where we try to pilot all the characters using our personality, right? You ever run into that?
There's always bits and pieces of either part of your personality or other people that you know in your life, or people that maybe characters from a show or a game that you try to take pieces of. At least that's how I do it when I write my characters.
Right. And that's the solution to that, is a lot of people, we try piloting these characters initially just with our whole selves. And then we realize, oh, these people need to be different. So we try to pilot these characters that are nothing like us. And the secret is, the middle ground is to slip in a shard of yourself or several, you know, to the point where it's not a self insert, but it's still, you're writing about things that you know. A good example, the main protagonist of Worlds Crossing Academy, his name is Aurum. Some of the commonalities that I had between him and myself were being a former Taekwondo instructor, and, you know, second degree black belt martial arts, which gives him kind of a unique stance in the story, because where most protagonists get jumped in an alley, he can actually handle that. But he's got his own hangups because he's got his own, you know, other trauma and things like that. So it's taught him to be very passive, which is a habit that he needs to break. So we have an MC that's not just a blank slate self-insert. We have an MC that has a character arc of his own. And I think a lot of people were not expecting that when they picked the game up. And the experience of having to learn how to be a security officer, which is something I've been doing since 2013. So, you know, writing about knowledge that you have is powerful because it makes it feel more real.
Yes.
And if you can chop up these pieces of yourself and distribute these shards of yourself between the characters, each character is going to have something that you know how to write. And that's going to make them feel so much more real.
Exactly. It just grounds everything in realism. In addition to taking things from yourself, you can take things from people you know personally as well. And that also grounds things in realism.
Exactly. It's really helpful when you have people you can talk to and research about certain subjects. One thing in particular that comes to mind that I was praised on how I handled it was panic attacks. The characters that you run across in World Crossing Academy all have their own quirks and things like that. There's 49 different love interests that we're working on writing. 21 of them are core characters that are included in the game. 7 of them are secret that you can unlock with, you know, different challenges and things like that. And we plan for 21 DLC characters. So,
damn.
Yeah, I bit off a little more than I could chew. But we have a dark elf security officer. Her name is Druthari, who endured some pretty heavy trauma before she came to this world. And she is subject to panic attacks. Now, I've only ever had one panic attack in my life. I remember pretty vividly, but I feel like that was not a good enough, I want to say it's like sample size, like it's all data and dispassion and everything like that, because, you know, the feelings are real and everything when that's happening. But I feel like I needed more to draw from. So I started talking to people who had panic attacks. And I asked them if they were comfortable describing these things to me. What's a good depiction that you've seen? And somebody pointed me towards a game called Light of My Life by Naughty Road. You may have heard of it.
Have you heard of it, Dr. X? It's not ringing a bell.
Not personally. What can you say about that game?
Oh, my God. The writing in that game is exquisite. It is entirely slow burn. For most of the game, you are not going to be engaging in, you know, much sexual activity unless you take, you know, some of the side character routes, which are optional, right? I just opted for the main routes. You have a household in which you have two, we're going to call them wards, because that's the default terminology for them. One is older, one is younger, and they each have their issues since, you know, your wife passed. One deals with anger, the other one deals with anxiety. And there's a specific scene where you take the younger one out to a museum and she gets overstimulated really fast. She can't go to school anymore. You've started to homeschool her because, you know, walking through the hallways is like playing a horror game for her. And the way that this is depicted is fantastic. Like, I could actually feel it. Like, there's the ringing in the ears and there's the muting of the sound and the garbled speech and people's faces transforming right in front of you. Well, in this museum, a tour bus full of kids comes in while you are looking at the Greek paintings together, and you see her eyes widen and, like, you're like, oh shit, here it is. And the way that they depicted that panic attack was so good that, like, that's what gave me the information to try to portray Druthari's panic attack in a similar fashion. So being able to talk to people, being able to research these things, you know, if you're doing a character that's going to be transitioning, talking to trans people is fantastic. My sister has a trans wife. We all live together, and it's just, the insight is amazing. So just like you said, grounded in reality, but play with the fantasy.
Exactly.
Yes.
And it really helps these characters just pop.
That description of that game you were telling me about actually brought me back to this memory I had of playing this game. It was a very popular game back in like the mid-2000s. It was called, I don't remember the exact name, but I remember the plot was that it was about that you had a sister who was kind of sickly. She had like an illness and you did like all these different things with her, walking her to school and all these other things. And I remember like I originally got the game because I was just like, oh, okay, well, I heard this game's a good FAP and stuff, and I'm gonna.
Right, because that's what we all think.
Yeah, but it turned out it was one of those classic, like, you know, came for the porn, but you stayed for the incredible emotional roller coaster. And I remember I binge played it through the late night, like to like 4 a.m., 4:30 a.m. And I was so emotionally like attached to her character. And you could have multiple endings. And I think the ending I got was that she like passed away or something. It was like so profoundly affected me. And, yeah. You know, it's those experiences you have. I think they sometimes subconsciously affect how you want to write characters and how you want to do them. Like, I remember the book that got me into writing. I remember back in high school, I was like 15, and it was To Kill a Mockingbird. Like, it was like one of the most classic like novels, because at that point I really had not put much value into books, at least not like, you know, books that were, you know, the books I had read were kind of whatever at that point. But then when I read To Kill a Mockingbird, and like the character depth and the way that they spoke to each other, and the very like, it felt very real, and like you could tell the emotions and the motivations of the characters. And it was from that point on is when I started to, I was like, I want to write. That's what I want to do. And from that point on, I started writing. So I've got about like a good 20 years of basically writing and having that experience.
Very, very nice. So in that regard, it's almost like playing D&D. If anybody's played D&D or been a dungeon master or a game master, if you play other systems, you understand that inspiration is the font of creativity. I'm going to make an analogy here, and it's going to stretch for a second, but bear with me. I promise it's going to bear fruit. While I was in Taekwondo, I had a rival. Okay. There, I remember distinctly when we were sparring one time. I had never seen this before. He made it up on the spot. What he did, it was a rear leg round kick, and it went over my head. I'm like, he knows I'm not that tall. What is he? And then, bam, the bottom of his foot hits my chest guard because he turned it into a hook kick. I'm like, oh my God, I need to learn that. Because it worked on me, I wanted to use it. When you play games that are able to emotionally hook you, you want to learn how they do it because it worked on you, obviously. So it will work on people. And that's what I seek to do. I like to play with people's heartstrings. In the prose world, I'm prose being, you know, writing, not prose as in professional, sorry. In the world of literary prose, I'm known to be somebody who's not afraid to make the hard decisions if it's good for the story. I'm not George R.R. Martin, who kills every single favorite character that you'll ever have. Man is a literary murderer, okay? He's just Attack on Titan with swords. Like, it's bad.
Yes.
I read the first three books and I stopped because every time I started liking a character, he killed him. I'm like, fuck this.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I made it a rule never to kill off a love interest in my games. That's one of the rules that I abide by.
Good, because we're very much like that.
Like, okay, because it traumatizes you, right? Like, no, you got this fucking game over here. You shove it down my throat. Now it's in my heart somehow. And then you're going to kill it? No, don't do that to me. So I have gotten death threats and hate mail for the original ending of my third book, which is not out yet. It was originally published as one book, and then I took it down and I split it into three parts and rewrote each part with about triple the content. So there are people out here who know the original ending of my third book, and I'm still undecided, in which there is a character death. And it was apparently so traumatic, and I had gotten people so emotionally invested that I started receiving hate mail and death threats. So,
it's an achievement at that point.
See, but
yeah, it is.
Right, yep. Like, I wore it as a badge of honor. Like, hey, but my writing was so good that I hurt people. But, you know, in the world of adult visual novels, people don't play these games to feel bad. And that's something I didn't know going into this. So when I was starting World's Crossing Academy way, way, way back over 3 years ago, because we worked on it for about half a year before I even released the first build. And during that time, my coder left. So I had to learn RenPy on my own from scratch. I'm a writer. I'm not a coder. I don't do that. It's not my... I took maybe like a year of Visual Basic 6 in 2004, okay? That's my coding knowledge. So you're going to stick me in here with a new engine I don't know how to work. I tried Tyranno Builder, and that was a massive failure. They've probably updated by now, and they're probably a lot better. I have a demo of something I called the Dreamwalkers, where the premise of the game was, where do people in comas go? You could enter a dream world and step outside of the boundary. Like, you know, you ever woken up and you had a scratch on your arm that you never knew where it came from? You did that in a dream. Anyways, off of Tyranno Builder, because it had problems. It wouldn't show text if you full screen the damn thing. So I had to tell people, don't full screen the game, but they'll do it anyways because nobody listens. Coming into Renpai, which I thought I had just played Doki Doki Literature Club and I'd been traumatized. I decided that, you know, I did want to learn Renpai and I wasn't going to give up on this project. So when I started World's Crossing Academy, I was writing it like I would write a novel. And so I started the story out super dark and super imposing. It was like, I haven't changed the experience much, but I've softened the words since then. And I've softened the experiences then, because I realized, with so much hate from the community, and because AVN players, they're very vocal. They'll let you know if you're fucking up. And I was fucking up. I'll fully admit it. Because you're working in what's supposed to be a co-ed junior college as a janitor, except that the headmistress is a massive feminist, the bad kind, because there are different kinds, and basically only hires men to do the menial, demeaning jobs like janitorial and maintenance. And everybody else, you know, it's a co-ed school, but she only brings in female students, she only brings in female staff, et cetera, you know. And for a brand new player who's used to playing games with such subpar story quality, that are used to you doing self-inserts, I almost didn't let people rename the main character. But it was such a common thing in AVNs that I decided, okay, I'll let them rename Aurum and put their own name in it if they want. But that garnered such a feeling of I am in this story that the overall man-hating in the atmosphere was too much for a lot of people. And they couldn't stand to get past the first few scenes. The other point of contention was Cecilia, who is your Yandere stalker. And her presence in the first chapter or so, the prologue of the first chapter, was oppressive to the point where some people just threw up their hands and would not play the game. So when you're writing things like that and you're used to writing other things, you have to understand that an adjustment has to be made because of your audience. When you're writing for readers of prose and, you know, literary fiction, you can get away with a lot more because it's your story, and people will understand that they're there for a roller coaster. With an AVN, you're playing an AVN because you want to feel good. And I didn't know that when I started this. So I have since reworked the entire first season to soften a lot of the language and to make a lot of things more clear. Take out scenes that were just big eyesores and replace them with things that actually mean something and gives you direction in the story and makes you understand that your actions are going to improve this situation. I wanted the character to start out with obstacles, but not so many obstacles that you felt like sick to your stomach. You didn't want to play the game, you know? So
I feel like there was this time period where these games go with these like bad ends, and like it's generally a terrible, at least in my opinion, it's usually a very bad idea, or at least it's the kind of game, like, you can do that if you want. Like, anybody can create a game however they want. But for me personally, and for Dr. X as well, we really are put off by games that, especially adult games, we're trying to enjoy. And like, all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, you know, you didn't visit Frankie on this day, so he jumped off the building and he died and you lose. It's like, and then you can't go back and you can't fix it, or it's like too late. So I can understand why some people kind of, they were like, you know, They were put off by the beginning of your game being a little too heavy and a little too intense. But at the same time, there are people who do like that and do find it interesting. So, you know, finding that balance of, well, like you said, I think the key change that you made was that you have obstacles and you have challenges, but you can make a positive impact on them and can change things. But yeah, I think that's the key is, Dr. X and I like to write characters, especially for IA2, because IA1 was very lighthearted in comparison to IA2, and that it was very, like, it was meant to it was meant to make you feel good. And that was our goal. And it's always been our goal with our games, that you will feel good about the relationships you get into. But in IA2, we wanted to have a little more, you know, depth to the characters and a little more of a conflict that would come up on characters, like with Tracy's character, right, for example, who I know you personally love his character route, and a lot of other people do too.
It was fantastic, yeah. Well, when you introduce a little bit of shadow, it makes the light brighter by comparison.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just like Bob Ross says, you gotta introduce a little sadness, a little darkness to your life so the good times feel even better.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic too. And when you're doing that, like, when you make the mistakes that I made in Worlds Crossing, I'm going to pick on myself. There's other games that do this, but I'm going to pick on myself here because I don't want to be slandering other creators on a live podcast here. Trust me, I'm very picky about the games that I play. I can have a laundry list of the ones that annoy me, but we're not going to go there because I don't want to make enemies. But when you make the kind of mistakes that I made, it's a massive feels bad, man. And that's not the experience I want to deliver to people that are looking for essentially a shot of dopamine. That's why they're here, right? So, but that's not to say that you can't introduce these things in a way that shows the light at the end of the tunnel exists. It can't be pitch black. You can't throw them into the fire without at least a bucket of water next to them. So I really had to shore that up. And since I've done it, since I combined both season one and season two into the same game, because I ran out of room, it crossed the 2 gigabyte threshold. And that stupid Android APK limit. And here's the rub, okay? Here's the thing that gets me. I didn't know that RenPy had updated to where it could do a thing where you could make a launcher game that would download the rest of the game. I'm currently working on that. And that happened in fucking March. I've been sitting here for half a year. Yeah, so I did end up combining both into the same game and using Estrada's Android ports, because he compresses it more than I do, so that way it's under 2 gigs. But I am working on a launcher version for Android, which would just auto update every time I push something out. But it's really interesting having to find that, what I like to call the Goldilocks zone, right? And anybody's going to get that reference. Just finding that sweet spot between the light and the dark where you can comfortably exist in gray and be intimately familiar with both sides. There's the majority of the players that used to give me trouble, because I don't really get a lot of complaints anymore. I'm really surprised. Were the ones that are hunting for the quick fap games where you're playing, you know, this, you know, Thunder Chad McChick Magnet self-insert character who is, you know, starts out perfect and all the girls are flocking, you know, fawning over him for no fucking reason. You didn't earn that. That's not, there's a certain thing to be said for anticipation. You know, if you're cooking something, it's better after you let it simmer for a little bit. The buildup is important. There's no artistry in just tackling somebody and, you know, one position, three speeds and bust. That's what all these fucking AVNs do these days. Annoys the shit out of me. I'll be playing something that's got a really good story. And then we get to one of the H scenes. One position, three scenes and bust. Great. That's fucking 12 seconds of my life I'll never get back. who gets off to that? Who does that? Who appreciates that? You got to put more. If you're going to make an AVN, you got to put more. You got to put more effort into your scenes. I have H scenes that are 30 video loops long, 50 video loops long in Worlds Crossing Academy. You have to make the payoff worth it, especially if you're going to do build up. Now, there's a game that I'm thinking about. It goes by typically three initials, and I'm not going to mention it by name, because I do like this creator and I do like their work, but dear God, if you have that much emotional buildup and you're breaking down people's walls, which feels great, by the way, you get the mean girl tomboy that fucking hates everybody and you're slowly softening her up until she finally opens up and talks to you. That's amazing. That's one of my favorite dynamics. But then the sex scene is one position, three speeds and bust. Brother, I will find you, like, and I will make you the star on your Christmas tree.
So it's like there's no dialogue during the sex scene.
Oh, there's some, but like it's like 12 to 30 seconds of actual scene there, right? And most of it's just analog for moaning. Like, come on,
I've seen a lot of that before.
You are filling space, and I know it because I've done it.
I think I know the game you're talking about. I won't say what it is, but I'm pretty sure I know because I have played some of it. And you're right about that.
It's a great game, and the characters are amazing. And the variety of characters is amazing. There's one particular quite bit chick that I'm maybe a little obsessed with. I'm just not the one that everybody goes after with the ears and everything, but good Lord, I would love to see that game reach its full potential as far as like being an adult game, because it's got the story and it's got the emotional tension down. Just needs a little bit of mechanic work on the rest of it. That's all. It is not a bad game by any measure, but it's just, you're just seeing wasted potential.
It kind of goes to show that, of course, I think in the community that we're in, I think they understand it more, especially creative
right,
people.
That was,
but
yeah,
creating something that has everything balanced right, the H scenes, the writing, the development of the routes and stuff,
and
that actually takes a tremendous amount of work and skill. And more importantly, having a good team to be able to get that all to work together. And that's hard. And, you know, many times what happens is first time developers, especially, they go way too ambitious with their first game. and the thing is people
I'm
always
in this picture, I don't like it.
I feel personally attacked.
Call that right now.
I feel personally attacked. But the thing is that you always end up, at least this is what I notice anyway. And even with IA, even the first IA, I was just like, oh, yeah, well, we're just going to have, you know, the main three of the main family members and then a few other, you know, side characters. And it'll be fine. It'll be like a very manageable game.
And then it's just Novas from there.
And it's just like, you're like, holy crap. Actually, I'm kind of glad we didn't go any further because, man, there was a lot of stuff in here and there was a lot of stuff we didn't get to and we wanted to do.
Yeah. See, I did not have your restraint. Can I send a picture in the text chat that is attached to the Discord channel real quick, just so you can see it?
Sure.
Okay. You get your live reaction to this. That's my free time select screen. That is when we have breaks in the main story, and you get to pick somebody to hang out with.
Looks like a fighting game.
Right?
I want to take you for a ride. I want to take you for a ride. That's what sounds like what would happen if you're on the character screen.
Yeah, by the way, the character that we were talking about before we started recording, the very last character in the core category, that's Wither. That's our little dryad.
I think it's so funny you called her, her name is Wither, because I keep thinking of Baldur's Gate 3 Wither.
Okay, okay, I've had this longer than that's been out, okay? This is mine. It is not some wrinkly up old dude. It's a cute little dryad who is very insecure because her powers revolve around destroying things, and dryads don't generally like that. So she's what's called an Utterthene, which is, I do have a speakable dryad language for my book series. I'm not a linguist like Tolkien, but, you know, I just at least one language in dryad that means with dirty hands. So all of her power revolves around destruction. So she's used to being the outcast shunned by everyone else. And we have, if you look three slots to the left, another dryad girl who is a little bit more of a typical dryad. And they're very good friends. They hang out in the garden together. But, you know, Wither's thing is she always feels, the other one's name is Saria, which translates to blossom. She always feels very insecure because Saria kind of has everything that she doesn't, right? She's taller, she's pretty, she's curvy, where there's, you know, Wither is a little bit more on the petite side of things. And, you know, her powers are typical dryad powers of, you know, growth and healing and fostering life and things like that. She's not an Artifini with the tattoos on her, branded on her skin like Wither is. You know, to be physically marked for the way that you were born is traumatizing. So I really wanted to show that in her character. And I can tell you that Wither is by far the most popular character in World's Crossing so far. If I go to my responses and my feedback form, I have a feedback form on the character popularity that has 2,800 responses. 2,798. I'm too off. I'm lying to you right now.
Wow.
And I asked, you know, which characters were your overall favorites? And I gave, you know, the list of the characters, most of which are in the core category. 2,033 of them, 72% adore Wither. The next one below her is at 1686. And that's Jade, the little martial artist that does Muay Thai. So she is a massively popular character, to the tune of being 400 votes above second place. That's a lot. That's a lot. That's a whole 12% differential. Now, understanding like where your popular characters are is kind of key to success, I believe, in these things. But you also have to give love to your less popular characters, too. So it's, I think, one of the biggest conundrums of AVN creators like us is who's going to get the next batch of screen time? Because you want to write scenes for them all, but you're one or two people and you can't do that. So you have to choose. You have to do things in batches.
Yep.
Yeah. And what happens sometimes is like sometimes you'll get like some comments like, why are you ignoring this character? Like,
yeah.
Why do you hate this character that you made? Because you know they're not getting content and the exact schedule that person wants.
If I can give any advice, don't take a character's popularity as a measure of their worth. Okay, everybody is going to be someone's favorite character, and you need to remember that.
Yep.
One of my massive mistakes in World Crossing, I have a wind elf named Eshtil. She's a fairly unpopular character, or at least mid. You know, she's on that same thing, 30% of people voted for her. She had 840 votes, but that's still 840 people.
Doesn't sound mid to me.
I mean, well, out of 3,000, that's 30%. That's not, you know, 50% is failing if you're in school. Okay. Like that's.
Oh, that's the metric we're following.
Right. I didn't really value this character very much because she's just kind of a generic, you know, light skinned, blonde, blue eyed elf, kind of what you would expect. Right. So I thought, okay, we're going to do something really cool story wise with her. Okay. You meet a librarian who is lesbian and not romanceable. And she develops a massive crush on Eshtil, at least in the original version. And in the original version, you figure out how you're supposed to court a wind elf. You tell her, she makes the bracelet, you deliver it for her, and you basically give away one of the love interests to an NPC. I got crucified for doing that. Because a lot of people really hated the librarian because she's very abrasive at first, because she doesn't know that you're not like one of the other janitors that is constantly harassing her, right? And you just gave away one of the love interests, and that was a lot of people. That was apparently some people's favorite character. And now, like, you know, you're telling me that I got to deal with this bitch while I want to try to go after this one. And, you know, it just really ruined the game for a lot of people. So when I changed it, I gave you an option. You can deliver it yourself to have a monogamous relationship with Eshtil. You can deliver it for Kiara and give her away, or you can deliver it and say it's from both of you. And that will open up a poly route, which will have extra scenes in it. So I learned that it's all about, if you're going to do something, you let the players choose. Because even though I don't refer to World's Crossing as a game, because I feel like that gives the wrong impression, I refer to it as a story. But people still want more game in their story. And to make decisions for them like that, in a novel, that would have been fine. In an AVN, no.
Yeah, well, I think it's really important. You bring up a very good point, Vic, is that when... Like, for example, I remember when I was creating IA, I remember there was a scene between the two petite characters, which yeah. were Julia and Sam.
Oh, no, you did the big fuck up, didn't you?
Well, no, actually, what we did was we made it so that there was a part in the scene where both of them were going to kiss. But what we did was, is we made it optional to where people who don't want to see that, we didn't have to like make that, didn't have to see that image. And instead it would just be them focusing primarily on the main character.
Right.
What I realized from that, though, was that you do want to, like, even something very that you would think, oh, well, you know, everybody likes it when, you know, two girls kiss or whatever. But actually, no.
You would be surprised how many people hate that.
Yeah, not everybody is into that. And so what we do now is we actually give even more choice and even more like making sure that if you don't want to, you know, be with this character, or if you want to, you know, do this with the character, you kind of have all those different options.
Right.
And, you know, like Tracy's character is not enabled by default. He does not appear in the game at all. You have to toggle it on.
Right, you have to opt in.
It is a balancing act because I mean, some people have brought up, like, you know, Tracy can be important for, like, representation. Some people view it that way.
Right.
So it's like they say, well, why don't you just have him enabled by default? And they had, that is a good point as well. So, but the other thing is, like, it is a porn game, and, you know, options are great in a porn game a lot of the time. So it's a balancing act.
So I ran into this problem exactly with that situation that I just told you right there. I cannot tell you how many people came into the forum screaming NTR because I had given away Eshtal. Okay. Now, that's not NTR. That's not what it means. NTR is cheating. You are in a relationship with somebody and they are cheating on you with somebody else, usually another guy. Now, I tell you, if you don't want that tag, there can be no other dicks. There can be no other dicks in your game unless you're the one interacting with them. If they go anywhere near the other girls, you are going to be doomed, because the NTR tag is a death sentence for games like this. And I had to fight so hard not to get that tag applied to my game, because I had to explain, it's not NTR. But since I changed that and gave the players options, I've had no more complaints. Put it in the hands of the player. Make it options. And don't, what I would say is, I've even gotten flack for making things just skippable, but they still happened off screen. A lot of players don't want that. They want it to just not happen in the story. So that's, I take it one step further than just, you know, fading to black. You know, with things like that, I give them the choice to whether or not it happens. And I, you know, it only takes a couple of renders to make that a story branch. And then, boom, you put it into variable, you move on with your life. The thing that you're talking about with Tracy happened to me with River. Now, those of you listening who haven't played World's Crossing Academy, this is going to be a spoiler. But I feel like it's important to talk about, so we're going to talk about it. So if you want, step away, fast forward, you know, probably, you know, 10, 15 minutes.
Cover your ears.
Cover your ears, your innocent ears.
But this is more of like a game development useful thing, I'm assuming. Yeah, so for those of you who are interested in that.
Yeah. So this little section here is going to be a little bit more for those who are on the development side. But, you know, devs play each other's games. One of my favorites is Crimson High. Vertigo has been instrumental in some of the things that exist in World's Crossing today. I would not have my texting system if it wasn't for Vertigo. We've done cross promos where he made this parody Netflix screen called Beanflix, and it's got like little like cover art for other AVNs and things like that on the bottom, and on the background, you know, where it's showing the show that you have highlighted, he's got World's Crossing Academy, and I have in mine Crimson High. So, you know, they're watching Crimson High together like it's a TV show in a different world. And I love doing collabs, by the way. So if I got some stuff coming up where a couple characters are going to be going to a movie theater. So that'll be a great spot for a collab for somebody. But my point is, circling back to the discussion, I have a character named River. River is also one of your smaller, more petite human characters, because my game is a little bit, my story is a little bit more about, what if fantasy worlds existed? You know, so you have all these fantastical races. I am particularly well known for my goblins. We'll get into that later. But River is somebody that you meet when your only friend in the school, Gilly, is going around introducing you to some of her friends, because she wants to destroy this whole stigma against men in campus, because she thinks it's unhealthy. And she thinks Miss Clements which is the headmistress, needs to change shit around. So she goes around and she introduces you to four of her friends, one of which is River. And River doesn't speak. She'll nod, she'll smile, but she just kind of sits there and lets Gilly talk for her. You get a little expression. She's wearing a Death Stranding shirt because that's one of my favorite games ever, fucking ever. She is obsessed with Elven High magic. And so the librarian, Kiara, mentions that there's three books that have been missing for months and they haven't been checked back in. And that's because River is obsessively poring over them. So there's a scene in which you go, you know, you've hung out with her a couple of times during the main story, and it's all platonic, right? Because I made the decision to take all of like the relationship and sexual stuff that I could and relegate that to the side story. So you have to opt into everything. I do want to mention that Cecilia, the stalker, and River, this character here, were both core characters at one point, and I moved them to secret, so you have to unlock them. And this is for a reason, because there were a lot of people who felt like they were being forced to interact with River after they learned her secret, and they were not happy. I actually had people drop support on Patreon citing her specifically, because when you look over her shoulder and, you know, read the books that she's reading, you learn about the rebirth ceremony that spirit elves can do for you, in which a person can be completely reborn with the body that they envision. And then he puts two and two together. River, you snuck in here, didn't you? You're not a girl yet, are you? And it's a very emotional scene between the two of them. And you have a choice there, right? Because it's already to the point where River is fond of you. But you have a choice there to limit how far that goes. You can choose to just stay friends. You can choose to let her kiss you right then and there. Or you can say, you know what? I'm going to work as hard as I can to get you the body that you want. Once you have that, you can kiss me all you want, right? So we have three different paths there. Whereas it used to be, it was either kiss her now or kiss her later. Some people didn't want to kiss her at all, just wanted to be friends. I didn't have that option. So people were feeling like they were being forced to engage in a kink that they weren't fond of. You know, so think of every game that's had golden showers that you couldn't avoid if you're not into that. Or, you know, God forbid, for me at least, four. No, thank you. Not my thing. A lot of people enjoy that. That's fine. Cool for you. Not judging you or king shaming you at all. Not my thing. Being forced to interact with something that you're not fond of or is not in your wheelhouse is just another massive feels bad, man, that people will absolutely dump your game over. So hard lessons learned there. Hard lessons. She is now, you still meet her in the main story, you still interact with her, you know, and discover that thing about them. But at that point, she becomes opt-in. Like, you've discovered the secret, you understand who this character is, your choice whether or not you want to pursue or not. And if you don't, there's not a lot of River in the main game anymore, because you've been introduced to her and her problem. I don't really need to give her screen time anymore, unless you're going to engage with her. So that's the decision that I made in the way that I organized things. I like to introduce the characters in at least a platonic way in the main story. And during our free time sections, it's not a sandbox. God, that's another word that almost got me crucified. I have these free time sections that are breaks of the main story, where you go to a menu screen and you choose somebody to hang out with and you view one of their scenes. And once you're done with that, you can choose another person to hang out with, or you can hit the main story button and go back to the main story. There's no stats, there's no grinding, there's no nothing. And so I've relegated a lot of the relationship building to the side scenes and the side story, because there's a lot of like main story things happening at the same time. But believe it or not, even though the goblins are by far the best characters in this story, there are people out there who don't like goblins. And that was a hard one for me to wrap my head around.
Impossible.
Right? That's what I'm saying. I didn't understand that. Because that's the thing that I've been universally praised for almost, is taking the goblins and making them cute without losing what makes them goblins, right?
Yeah, that's super important.
There's games, they're just green humans.
So they don't even have any characteristics of a goblin? They just look like a...
They have slightly pointed ears and they're green humans.
I mean, wouldn't they be like an orc at that point?
No, orcs. Orcs look more distinctive than that.
Oh yeah, that's true. They do. Yeah,
right. Orcs will have tusks. They will have a little bit more of a muddy, like grayish green skin. Like, and you know, I will even, you know, make them distinct from ogres, which ogres are going to be bigger than orcs, and they're going to have a little bit more of a yellowish tinge to the skin. Whereas, you know, my goblins, it's hard for me to fathom that somebody would not like goblin. It really is.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because when we were making the first IA during development, you know, we had release and builds and stuff. There are some people who said, I'm not really into the smaller characters, the more petite characters. And we were like, oh, that's interesting. So that is one of the reasons why you can get the ending of the first IA without doing anything with any of the smaller characters, the more petite characters.
Right, and that's important too. Like, it's, you understand what the main selling point and kink of your game is, but you can still allow for people not to engage with that if you have sufficient room. I'm going to go ahead and post another little something in here in the attached text chat.
What's funny now is that now we have people on the other end who have been like, you know, I've really wanted like IA to end where you only are with the petite characters at the end. And so now Dr. X and like are like, you know what? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Probably should do that in a future update, is allow that to happen.
Yeah, for the first IA, because we are planning to update it a little bit.
Oh, okay. So there's going to be a little bit more added to the first game. I understand you guys lost your artist, right? Was that the issue?
Well, it wasn't so much that we lost him. It was more like he wanted to conclude his time working on the first IA. He was not super into the female petite characters. He was okay right. with the, you know, the main character and the interaction with, you know, the older women and stuff.
Right.
But I think just over time he wanted to go off and do something else. And so, you know, we were like, that's fine. And he did all the art that we wanted and concluded the game, and it was good. And then from that point on, we were just kind of like, you know, this is actually surprisingly tough to find somebody who's able to depict petite males, petite females, women, like, and have all of that interacting together. That's actually incredibly tough to find an artist willing to do all that and be able to do it quickly or efficiently and also high quality art. So,
and who also isn't living in fucking Australia. You may have heard of a game called Proud Father. You remember what happened to Westy?
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, they are fiercely protective over there, and it's a good thing that they are. Okay, this is not a bad thing, but people who don't need to get in trouble end up getting in trouble. So just looking at the picture of the goblin group that I sent in the text chat right there, right? How many of those, I mean, they're all short. They're all about, you know, two-thirds of a human's height, right? How many of those do you think could get somebody in trouble in Australia? They're all adults. They're all, you know, in their culture.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you don't even necessarily know the threshold, and that's one of the problems.
Right. Just because a character has, you know, is slim and isn't a fucking G-cup does not mean that it is a child, you know? And I wish, you know, the government would really, really understand the context of these certain things, because it would be a massive, massive tragedy if somebody like ended up going to jail just for having something like this on his computer. And it really sucks, because like, if you knew anything, if you had played the game, if you've, you know, seen these characters in action, you'd know that none of these characters are underage.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's lots of work various governments around the world have to do on this specific issue. And not even just necessarily the smaller characters, but also like other kinks, like
absolutely, yeah.
And Australia, you know, they have problems with like piss and stuff like that, which amazes me.
Yeah.
But you know, in general we have to be better about that stuff.
Yeah, so I think context is important, because you know, you have people around the world who are afflicted with various conditions. You have dwarfism being one of them, and you see a lot of people going around, and you see somebody who has a smaller frame, you know, who's built with a smaller frame, and they go, you know, ew, they look like a child. Like, how fucked up is that if you're that person who has to live with that? Would you say that about you know, Warwick Davis or what is that, Peter Dinklage, right? Very, very famous actors with dwarfism, right? You know, you have people who can't change this facet about themselves. And by calling things that are smaller disgusting, you are essentially dooming these people to never date, because there's such a stigma around small things that these people, you know, have such a hard time finding people to be with, right? So I think if the overall attitude was changed a bit, like, the people who didn't need to be affected by this wouldn't.
That's right. And some people don't realize that this is, it's essentially body shaming.
Yeah, I agree fully.
I remember there was this woman who was, I remember hearing about this, that she was fired from her modeling company because they basically said, You look too much like a child, and we don't want to get in trouble. So we're not going to keep you on a company,
which is fucked up. Have you seen Japan?
Because your body's this way, so no, you're not allowed to. Even though she was like 22, or
yeah, you were born this way, so fuck you. You know, there was a report. I think it was a TV special actually. There was a lady, she was in her mid-20s, and I think the headline was that she was trapped in the body of an 8-year-old. And can you imagine living with that? Like,
oh, I know who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about. Okay.
She has a show.
Oh, does she have a show? Okay. That's great.
Well, I know there is someone who does have a show like this. And I was thinking about that when we were talking about that stuff.
For every one person that you hear about, there's at least 10 that you never hear about, right? That's why I say on the forums, every one person that complains or speaks up, there's 10 others that aren't, right? So I always take things seriously. But you have people like that pop up that have these, they can't change. They were born this way. And you're going to call it disgusting to want to date them? How do you think that makes them feel? That's fucked. You're basically saying, hey, because you look too petite, you look too short, you're doomed to be alone for the rest of your life. Fuck you. That's so cruel. And she already has enough time, enough trouble with it, because between the stigma that the United States in particular has against things that are smaller and the creeps that seek her out just because of that, like, can you imagine what a nightmare her dating life is? No, obviously you can't change the latter thing, right? But the former we can. We don't need to have this attitude. The context is important.
And I think this is where it shows how important making fictional stuff like what we create is huge, because think about if you made a game. Well, I mean, your game already does do this in a way.
We have several smaller framed characters. We have a wide variety of body styles across 49 love interests. There's something for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, it's oftentimes fictional stuff, fictional works end up kind of being like either a catalyst or a talking point for IRL issues. That's
right.
It's frequently what happens. Many, many social movements and political movements. Not all of them, of course, but there definitely have been movies and games and books that have given some kind of commentary. And maybe sometimes they're not even intended to be that way, but people interpret it as it. And then they suddenly start thinking more about, well, you know, this is kind of unusual that we look at things this way, like, you know, people who are petite in size and how they're judged and things like that. And that's why I think the fictional stuff is so important.
It really is. I would even go so far as to say this kink has a closet, because it is so universally demonized. And the people, the gay community used to say that you can't control what you're attracted to. You're just attracted to whatever you're attracted to. And if you are cursed at birth to end up being attracted to something with a smaller, more slight frame, or, you know, if you like the more innocent upturned eyebrows versus the mature frowny eyebrows that, you know, women paint on their faces these days. I don't understand that. If you're more into cute than sexy, or if you're more into bubbly than chill, right? Like, a combination of these things makes you have to walk around life feeling like you're a monster. We don't need to be creating any more monsters. We have enough. I want to circle back to what you said about fictional media being important. Because with fictional media, you can't hurt a pixel. You can't.
Well, that's probably the most important thing that governments need to realize. That's one of the critical things.
Right. But fictional content serves a purpose here, okay? Because if it doesn't matter what your particular flavors are that you find, you know, arousing or gratifying. It can be anything. Some people are into scat. Some people are into vor. Some people are into gutural. Some people are into NTR as their primary kink, right? Or flavor. If one of your flavors is outlawed and banned, what happened in America during the Prohibition when alcohol was illegal? People were quite literally dying from alcohol poisoning. If you make something illegal, they will find ways to overindulge in a way that is not healthy. And the more that you limit fictional media, the more people are going to feel like the only way they're ever going to have that itch scratched is if they go and do something that they would have ordinarily never done had this been, you know, an accepted part of society, which is to go out and do something in real life. I'm willing to bet that of like avian enjoyers and things like that, people who enjoy this specific kink, at least 90, if not more, 90% of these people would never consider doing anything like that to anybody in real life, because it is proven to be emotionally and mentally damaging, right?
I'd say it's honestly probably like 99%. Honestly, I think it's even higher.
Okay, that's even furthering my point. I was being, you know, generous to the conservatives with the estimate, right? But to be able to consume media in your preferred kink, whatever that kink is, that is fictional in nature, using fictional characters, not likenesses of real people, and is presented in a digital format, is hurting no one. And to be able to scratch that itch is important, because you're never going to go out and do that to anybody. It is safer to allow people to consume media of their preferred kink than to limit it and demonize it and lambast it to the point where people feel like they have to sneak around and they have to do things in the worst way possible. If anything, you're creating more of those situations. You're damaging more people by limiting that media.
It's like trying to convince people that they're monsters. That's one of the problems, that if you portray things as if even liking the fictional stuff is like evil and bad, then that,
right,
that can make people internalize that and convince them that they themselves are evil and bad. So we shouldn't be trying to convince people that they can't act morally. And that's one of the problems when we outlaw certain kinds of fictional content. Like, that's sending a really bad message,
right? Because you're assuming that everybody who likes this kink is automatically going to go out and hurt people if you let them. Like, you have to beat the kink out of them. You can't do that. You can't. It doesn't happen. We are pre-programmed. That's the whole reason, you know. And I understand there's a psychological reason why people may become fans of this kink later in life. Those of us who have sustained a lot of damage in our love lives, right? From people in our age bracket, right? Or people who present more traditionally, to the point where, you know, some people become so jaded and afraid that they're no longer attracted to the types of people who have dealt this damage to them. And as such, something that is more petite, something that seems like it would really activate your protector instinct, feels better to you. It feels safer, right? Because if you are in a position where you're allowed to take care of this person that you're, you know, that, you know, fits this flavor of yours, you are not in danger. You get to be the person that was in the position that those other people were in, but made a different decision. You have the power to inflict pain, but you don't use it. And that's what you wish the other person would have done. So you can kind of live out that wholesome power fantasy of, you know, being the caretaker, or the rich noble who doesn't abuse his servants, or, you know, the servants live just as well as they do. You know, there's the list goes on. Like, I can give you a dozen scenarios in which, you know, people live out wholesome power fantasies. And that's, I feel like, you know, engaging with a kink like this is one of those, is, you know, having the option and having the power and choosing the good route, if that makes any sense at all.
And the other thing is, like, yeah, I think these games can provide a lot of good mental health help for people, because as you've been kind of talking about, it can be a very big comfort for people. And that sort of thing can also help prevent IRL abuse if a person is mentally well.
Right.
Because if they're depressed, they might have a greater chance of doing something harmful in real life.
Absolutely.
But if instead they're getting their needs met in fiction, then that chance definitely goes down.
Oh, drastically. If you're having a craving for chocolate, you've been having a craving for chocolate for weeks, and I give you vanilla, and I give you strawberry, and I give you banana, and I give you lemon. These are all nice, but you still have the craving for chocolate. The only way you can get the chocolate is by killing the guy that's guarding it, right? That's not an attractive option. You don't want to kill the guy. Craving, but I keep giving you these other flavors. I come up with, you know, come up and I'm doing the cookies and cream. Now that's close, but it's not chocolate, right? I'm, you know, go over here and I do with you the pistachio ice cream. What is this? Why is it in my mouth? You know, and over time, just God, I just want some chocolate, man. Just a little bit of chocolate. And the longer you go with that itch, the more attractive killing that guy becomes. Would you normally do that? If your craving was being met? Fuck no, you would not. Even if it's not chocolate ice cream like you want, and it ends up just being, you know, a double chocolate cookie, it's not in the form you want, but at least you got some chocolate, right? That'll tide you over.
Yeah.
So with the cookie being the euphemism for digital media versus what's behind the gate, take the cookie. The guy gets to live, right? Uh-huh. And you get to not be in trouble for killing him. That's...
Yeah, and it's... This discussion's about like kinks in general, right? It's not like not a certain kink, right?
If with any flavor, like I said, chocolate is a very common flavor in a literal sense. In a figurative sense, you could slot in any kink to this. Some people like breast expansion, right? Some people like weight gain.
Well, bestiality is a big one that people get stigmatized over as well.
Yeah, that's a massive one. That is a massive one. I didn't even think about that.
Non-con as well.
Right. That's another one.
You can even think of things like, for example, like huge insertions, for example.
Yep.
Yeah, that's definitely a key. It's one of the ones that I hate the most. You know, every dick must be massive trope. Like, okay, I'm sorry. We've all seen the Overwatch videos where it's like the size of their head. How do your lips stretch that way? That does not look pleasurable for either person. There's teeth in there. But yeah, no. You could slot any kink into that chocolate flavor euphemism, and it would ring true.
Yeah. Because like for the huge insertion example, for example.
Yeah.
You could do that in real life, but it would be pretty dangerous for you to do.
It would be traumatizing, is what it would be.
So it's, for a lot of people at least, it's going to be better physically. That fantasy in fiction instead of doing it in real life.
Yeah, to have that digitally. Right, and it's so much... You can't break anything!
Yeah, so when it comes to mitigating harm or reducing the chance for harm through fiction, it really is a matter of both not harming anyone else, but also not harming yourself.
I think that's a fantastic point. I didn't even think about, you know, the physical ramifications of that, of things like, you know, the huge insertion kink and the weight gain kink. Weight gain is a massive kink for a lot of people. That's not one that I personally am into, but I'm a heavy subscriber to the... There's a channel on YouTube called Sex Positive Gaming, and the lady Annie that does the videos on it. Oh my God, I would kill to get Worlds Crossing onto her channel. Oh my God. But personal fantasies aside, I really love what she says. She says, no shaming, only gaming. And that's been a rule in my Discord server for Worlds Crossing since day one. We do not kink shame. Because I want everybody to feel, I have a game, a story, that has a something for everyone approach. How can I do that and then turn around and be a massive hypocrite by making fun of kinks when I'm actively making them in the story?
Right, it's all or nothing, really.
I'm going to serve you lemon pie. I'm going to make fun of you for eating it. That makes no sense. You're not going to come back to my shop, right?
Yeah.
It's really, really important to be open-minded and to be accepting of people, even if they're into things that you don't understand, because you don't know what wires are crossed in their brain. You don't know what their life experiences have been. Everybody has a story and a life and a history, and these inform the decisions and can sometimes inform the things that excite and attract them. I can tell you right now, one of my favorite characters in Worlds Crossing is Saffron. She is a little short stack goblin that I have to struggle not to give a ton of spotlight to because I enjoy this character so much. Have you ever had that in IA where you've just fallen in love with one of your own creations? You have to struggle not to give them too much screen time and show clear bias?
We love all of our characters for sure, and it's hard to choose sometimes which character you want to work on. We try to balance it between the bigger characters and the smaller characters, but it's not always
between
easy.
Between your variety,
it's not always easy to know who exactly to go with. But I think sometimes we do lean towards a certain character based on like how we're feeling for like what kind of mood we're in, like what we're excited to do for. So yeah, it can definitely be tough to try to balance things.
Yeah, no, there's sometimes where I look on at what I've created. I'm just, wow, I hurt myself today.
Yep. I mean, I remember one character, Robin, which is the mom character of IA2. I mean, I wrote a 100 plus page scene for her, though, which was kind of like her penultimate kind of like scene. And like, but I mean, the thing is that we would get comments from people that said they, you know, they actually cried over her scene. And, you know, that sort of stuff makes, you know, really makes us feel good that we created, you know, a character that they really feel attached to. And, you know, we feel attached to them as well.
She's a fantastic character, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad you like her character, because she was like a big character for us too. And, you know, a ton of people love her character. And the thing is that because her route is like has so many scenes compared to many other characters, we're now working on other characters. But like people are just like, oh, man, well, when are you going to get back to Robin? So it's like a double edged sword where you're just like, we do want to get back to Robin, but we need to put more scenes in for the other characters, because Robin's got plenty already. So it's a tough balancing act. It really is tough.
It really is tough too, because like I try to go off of community feedback to the point where I'll let my highest tier supporters kind of dictate if, you know, a few characters get included in the next batch of side content, the ones that they want to see focused on. You know, I've had to kind of adjust my approach to that, because one of our characters, Druthari, the Dark Elf, she's up to 5 scenes now, and she's the only one who has 5 scenes. Mouse has 4 scenes. I think everybody else has 2 or less, or, you know, or 0. The ones there's plenty that just have none yet, you know, because she's such a compelling character and people have really enjoyed breaking down her wall and her stigma. Because one of the things that, you know, human males are not like dark elf males. They're not subservient. They're not submissive. You know, she feels like she's constantly being judged. So she has to project an aura of strength. But becoming one of the few people that she'll let see her in her vulnerable state is powerful. And people really have enjoyed that experience. So when you have a character like Robin, who, you know, out as this, you know, charming but firm and fair authority figure, the way that the slow burn develops with Robin and the second guessing that happens and the emotional tension and the initial regret, what did I just do? What am I doing type thing? These are real human reactions that serve to make her more real. And so it's no surprise that people want more Robin when the crafting of her as a character, like, and you could have done anything with this character, right? If I remember correctly, she rides a motorcycle, right?
Oh, yeah.
How many biker moms have you fucking seen in AVNs? That is a nuance that speaks massively to her character, right? Getting dropped off at school on a motorcycle, hell yeah. You know, I will say in my defense, I have not updated IA2 in, I want to say, a good year. So,
oh, well, you'll have a lot to look forward to then if you do.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot more stuff. Last I played... There was actually two of the characters that you go to school with that I think didn't have any scenes at all, or only had one scene, like an introductory scene, and that was it.
Yep.
I have a lot to look forward to that fantasy. Fantastic. I'm going to have to, if for nothing else, at least for the story, I'm going to have to check that out, because I really want to know where the story, for a couple of these characters go. I think you play the androgynous best friend really well as well. That's a little kink in a trope that I absolutely adore.
Alex.
Yeah. Even to the point where, you know, finding out that the character is indeed female. Some games do that, some games don't, you just know. But that's another really fun, I want to say, nuance, character building block that there's a couple of games have done. I'm trying to think of another one that I played recently, but I can't come up with the name, but I've been really curious to where that story is going as well, and really wanting to see more with those characters. I believe there's one that's the daughter of one of the teachers, if I'm correct. Darker skinned girl.
Yeah, that's Haley.
Yeah, Haley. Thank you. Real curious about her. Also really curious about the bossy one.
Sarah.
Initially, I thought we were told that she wasn't romanceable, or at least she wasn't selectable. But I'm hoping that that is not the case.
Yeah, she'll be romanceable.
Yeah, so having her as an option, like I always enjoy encountering the pissy characters and then digging down to find out what's under that. And I've taken that approach with a lot of characters out of World's Crossing as well, to have that, you know, a little bit tougher demeanor, but with people, with players and readers that are emotionally intelligent enough to handle it in the same way that Aurum handles it and want to look past that and understand that, you know, the slights and the insults are not personal, but just a defense mechanism. To be able to enjoy that kind of story, I think takes a little bit extra something in a person, because I cannot tell you how many times I've gone to the forums and people absolutely hate Kiara, or the who is my, you know, rather vicious lesbian librarian, or absolutely hate Cecilia because, you know, I wonder if you guys have ever had a character that was that polarizing. I would guess maybe Tracy, but typically with Kiara, or not Kiara, with Cecilia, people either, and there's almost no gray area on this, either they want a redemption arc for this stalker who can and will stab you, or they want her to die. There's no in between. They want her dead, or they want a redemption arc. Have you ever encountered that with your characters?
I would say with Tracy, with Tracy, we did get some, like, a homophobe on the IE server who got very mad if someone said something good about Tracy, and like would like DM them and with some very harsh words.
You gotta, it's time to start pulling weeds.
And when we our blog spot that we have for IA, when we have the comments enabled that could be posted anonymously, man, we get a lot of Tracy Tracy hate that they,
yeah.
And you know, made me think about that. Like, I mean, there were people saying that they're just like, look, I just knowing that Tracy's in the game, I don't want to play it. Like yep. You need to remove yep. this character completely, even though because it's like we even like tried saying to him, we're just like, you know, Tracy's an optional character. Like, by default, he's off. Like, you don't, and there's like, it doesn't matter, because the fact that I know that character is in the game, I will not play it.
And you know why? Can I tell you why?
What do you think?
Ego and stigma.
Yeah.
If we hadn't created such a stigma around, you know, being perceived as gay, or in, you know, here's what I say. If you're a straight guy, I'm going to tell you, as a 100% straight guy, I went for Tracy. I may have mentioned this earlier because I can never remember what I say. This is why I don't lie. You'll always catch me because I never remember what I've said. But the story was too good for me to avoid Tracy. And that's becoming, you know, white, straight, Christian guy, whatever. None of that matters. Do the things that you enjoy. It's like walking by the beach and you desperately, desperately want to go sit on the beach because you know you would enjoy it. But people know that you hate water and you can't give that image of yourself. So you deny yourself the thing that's going to make you happy. Don't let one little thing ruin an entire game for you, because what you're doing is you're robbing yourself of that experience that these people have worked hard on.
So if people want to find your game, how can they find it?
I am on itch.io is the main place to download the public version. So that's Victor 7, spelled out S-E-V-E-N, .itch.io/WCA for World's Crossing Academy. Both seasons have been combined into one game. Now, if you want to support the game and you're into creators like me who believe in the things that I do and the way that I make my stories, it's patreon.com/emberwings. And I do believe it is subscribestar.adult/emberwings as well. I prefer Subscribestar over Patreon just because they don't do content policing like Patreon does.
People can play his game, and if you like it, please consider supporting him on Patreon or Subscribestar, and preferably Subscribestar.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Definitely check out his game. It has a ton of characters. It's got something for everyone. And he really does mean that, Vic does, because, man, he's got a ton of characters. We're probably going to put up some pictures like during the episode so you kind of just see what he's got.
Oh, does this come out in video format?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah, I can send you tons of references and stuff like that if you want. So
we usually include a few pictures, yeah. but But yeah, like this is actually a video format and audio format for people who want to either listen to it or they want to watch it. So yeah. Well, we really appreciate having you on. It's been a really, really fascinating conversation. And, you know, certainly it's something that we'd love to talk about with writing and character development.
Yeah. Like I said, I have over 24 years of writing experience. Published fantasy author on Amazon, have stuff on Wattpad as well if you want to read it for free instead. But I do book coaching on the side. I teach people how to write. And my focus is characters. I felt that if I'm not good at world building and I'm mediocre at best at plot development, but I find that if you have good characters, they'll write the plot for you. They'll yep. build the world for you. So I chose to focus on characters. I absorbed everything I could about character building blocks and even included some best practices for writers, which one of which I'll give you for free right now. If you're ever writing something and you're doing the common writer pitfall of writing chronologically, you're shooting yourself in the foot. Because if you think, oh, I have to write the prologue, then chapter one, then chapter two, then you're going to pigeonhole yourself into thinking, oh, I have this great idea for chapter eight, but I can't write it yet. I'm not there yet. And then by the time you get there, you lose it. So my advice, make yourself what I call a scenes file. Anytime you think of a scene, you write that scene down immediately. It could be bullet points. It could be a paragraph describing what happens in the scene, or it could be a full scene with dialogue and everything. Or in this case, if you're an AVN creator, the code and everything, write it as a separate scene in a separate file somewhere and keep it. And then when it comes time, you'll let, oh, wait, I wrote that scene already, and you'll have it.
That is a golden nugget of information, because that was something I had to kind of learn with my writing over time. It was be like, okay, I don't need to write things chronologically, like step by step. I can, if I get stuck, so this is especially true when you get stuck too.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you get stuck and you're like, oh man, how does this character say this thing next? But I got all this other stuff. Well, then forget that for now and move on to the stuff you do know.
Go write the stuff that you can write. Come back to it.
And then 99% of the time, what happens is when you're writing the stuff you did think about, you're like, oh yeah, you know what? The character can say this and that. Now I've got it.
Because you've already written the thing that happens in the future and it informs what you can do.
Yeah, that's right. So it helps you realize what the character would say leading up to that. And trust me, that absolutely works. It does help a ton.
Working backwards is such a big technique. And that leads into my rule number two. I'll give you this one for free too. Never delete anything. Cut and paste it. Because you will, and the 1% of times that doesn't work for you, you've written yourself into a corner and you need to do some surgery and cut something out. Never delete anything. Cut it and paste it into your removed scenes file. You will never know when that comes in handy. I can tell you, in my second book, there was a scene with something called an atlasaur. Basically, if a T-Rex could breathe fire, not fun. Even for mages, not fun. And I decided that this scene didn't belong, but I cut it out and I put it in my removed scenes file. And you know what happened? I ended up needing that scene with some adjustments. But I ended up needing that scene, and it ended up being one of the best scenes in my book. And I almost robbed myself of that. Never delete anything. Cut it and paste it.
Yeah, yep. Put it in either Notepad Plus, excellent free open source mm-hmm. program, or just put it in whatever document program you've got. Like I use Google Docs all the time. This is super useful.
You can even make another RPA or RPY file inside RenPy if you're working in RenPy.
That's true. Yep.
And just have your removed scenes there. That way it's all in your project. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. You get me started about writing stuff and character building blocks and the different types of character arcs and how negative character arcs are the hardest to do and all this shit. You will get me talking. This podcast won't be over for another 3 hours. So I'm going to shut up.
Well, like I said, it's been awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I feel honored to be here. It's great to meet both of you. I wish you massive success with IA and IA2. I'm looking forward to your updates.
Thank you very much. We wish you success for your game as well.
I appreciate it. Thank you.